presents Class of 89.
I bought you something, Mommy. I bought you something, Mommy.
Thanks for tuning in to Class of 89 on the Fangoria Podcast Network, where we take you behind the scenes of our favorite movies that turned 30 this year. I'm Natasha Pizzetta, your host and vanguard of the vault over here at Fangoria, and this is our third and final episode of our series on the original Pet Sematary movie from 1989. We have a double bill for you today. Miko Hughes, the young star of Pet Sematary, who played Gage Creed, and Academy Award nominated makeup artist John Blake join us. We'll get to Miko and John's stories in just a minute. But first, I want to tell you about Fangoria Magazine. Fangoria Magazine is back and better than ever in a deluxe 100-page quarterly edition. Each issue includes set visits, deep dives, new discoveries, and minimal ads, all printed on collectible-grade paper stock that reimagines the classic magazine for a 2019 audience. You'll see familiar names like Michael Gingold and Tony Timpone, and you'll see bylines that will leave your jaw on the floor like Barbara Crampton. And the best part, it's print-only, just like the old days. Go to Fangoria.com to subscribe today. And I want to tell you about our friends at the Stan Winston School of Character Arts. Whether you're interested in creature design, sculpting monsters, or makeup effects, Stan Winston School's comprehensive course library has you covered, featuring hundreds of hours of in-depth video instruction by award-winning industry professionals. Best of all, you can learn on your own time at your own pace from any internet-connected device. So start your free 7-day trial right now and begin your learning adventure at stanwinstonschool.com. That's stanwinstonschool.com. Now, let's get into Pet Sematary. Miko Hughes is up first. You played Gage Creed in Pet Sematary, and you were really, really young when you were in that movie. How old were you?
I believe I was 27 months, according to my mom, during filming. So just over two.
So I know you get this question a lot, but do you have any recollection of what it was like on set?
It's strange because I was so young. They're almost like memories of memories at this point. I don't know how much is real or is just an echo of remembering it. It's been such a big part of my life that it's been repeated, and I think I've held on to it more than anything else from being so young. But it's hard to say, you know, at this point.
Yeah, I bet it must be weird. People asking you like, "Oh man, do you remember this part?" And you're like, "No, dude, I was too."
Yeah, it's bits and pieces, and a lot of what I know is put together through other castmates and my parents and photographs and that kind of thing.
Mary Lambert, the director, she was really insistent on casting you as Gage. You really impressed her. Have you talked with her about the movie over the years at all?
Yeah, I'm forever thankful to her for casting me in it. Yeah, we see each other on rare occasion. I think last I saw her was at a horror convention. I think I auditioned for her for a project some years ago. And we keep in touch a little bit here on social media, Twitter, that kind of thing.
Did she ever explain to you, like, you know, this is why you were Gage, like, I needed to have you? What was behind her push for you in that role?
Yeah, you know, I'd like to sit down and talk to her a little more about it as well, because I don't think we got into too much detail with that. She was just, she did express how she was very careful with me on set about you know, some of the gore and potentially confusing things that are part of a horror movie that could, you know, not be ideal to expose a 2-year-old to. So she was very cautious about that. And I don't remember being uncomfortable or, you know, grossed out by anything. For me, it was just playing pretend. It was what all kids do. I just got to do it on a much larger scale.
There's some scenes in Pet Sematary that involve a Gage puppet, and it was utilized for a couple of them. I just wanted to know how you felt watching those scenes when you actually first got to see the movie and comprehend it in its entirety. What was that like? Because it's kind of a weird thing, because when you watch the movie, you definitely can tell, you know, this is Miko Hughes and this is obviously a puppet they made. But that must have been a weird thing for you to see.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, I'm sure it was pretty creepy, and it's still a little unsettling. But it definitely is showing its age. I never got scared by my own scenes because I could vaguely remember it, and I knew it was myself, so it wasn't that. It didn't have that much of an effect. But the Zelda scenes got me more than anything because I wasn't there for the filming of that. I was about 12 when I watched the movie all the way through from start to finish for the first time. I'd seen a scene here or there prior. But yeah, I end up watching it, it seems like, every 5 years or so, just because circumstance with friends or
right.
don't want to watch it. And it's an odd experience every time.
What's that conversation like when you're meeting new friends?
Sure. Yeah, I don't bring it up. It's not the first thing out of my mouth, of course. But usually at some point, they'll either figure it out or it'll come up. And it's a varying response. Some people are totally surprised and think it's, you know, a big deal. And then others could care less. And, yeah, it's fun. I kind of appreciate being able to have that, I guess, some level of fame, but then also live a normal life and not get recognized all the time. It's a little bit of the best of both worlds, I think, for me.
Yeah, absolutely. That is the way to go, I think. What was your parents' initial reaction to reading Pet Sematary? Were they horror fans at all?
I don't think they were horror fans specifically. I don't think they had anything against it. I think they saw it as a good opportunity for me. I just started acting. I think I'd gotten headshots maybe 6 months prior. My mom took me to auditions. So I did like a public service announcement and a commercial. I think one other little thing, and then it was about 2 or 3 months after starting that I got Pet Sematary, so I'm sure they were cautious, you know, in consideration of the content, but I would have been upset if they wouldn't have let me do it, you know, if I could have known now.
What was their reaction to seeing you as Gage Creed?
Yeah, man, you're asking some really great questions because I hadn't even really considered it myself. By the time I was conscious enough to wonder about their reaction to it, enough time had passed that it was just a known thing. It wasn't the initial excitement had worn off because I was 5 or 6, and even then my concept of it, that's all I knew, was acting, and it was, I didn't know any different. So only now I can really appreciate what how lucky I was, really.
Yeah, it's just such a creepy role that is, you know, ingrained in people's memory. And, you know, as a 2-year-old, what a cool thing to just, you know, say you did and look back on. You know, people are replicating it. I know you go to conventions all the time. People have Gage tributes. They have your face tattooed on their body.
That is mind-blowing. The first one really freaked me out. And then I've lost count now. Now it's fun to see all the different interpretations, and I'm flattered. It's wild.
Why do you think the horror community just is in love with Pet Sematary? Like, it is, it's an endearing movie, you know, for all its faults and for as much time has passed, and there are conversations about how well it's aged, but it's still, people still love it. I love it personally. I love that movie. Why do you think it's such a movie that hits a chord with people?
I think its strength is, at its core, it's about a family that gets torn apart, and people can relate to the connections they have with their own family and consider what they might do if they were in that situation. And there's some extreme events that that send them down the road that they go. And I think it's a horror, but it's also pretty character driven, I suppose.
That innate fear, especially when you're a parent of, you know, losing a child, that is probably one of the most horrific things you can ever go through. And that itself makes it scary, on top of, you know, you have the Zelda character, and I will always think the scariest part in that movie is Denise Crosby telling her husband about how Zelda died, and that when when she finally died, she ran out of the room screaming. But she wasn't actually screaming. She was laughing.
She's laughing. Yeah. Yeah. I think you don't see necessarily as often in modern horror that I can think of, at least. It's usually supernatural or a monster or alien. And this definitely has a supernatural element, but it addresses real life horrors that do happen in real life, that people die and innocent people die and undeserving people die, and it isn't necessarily always quick. And that's a true horror of you know, a fact of life. And it reinforces appreciating the good things. And it kind of brings that in with the traditional horror elements of the supernatural.
Definitely.
And maybe that's why it's had so many people connected with it.
It hits you at every level. It's like, oh, cool effects. Oh, crap, real life horror. That's not good.
And yeah.
It's just like a big, it's so scary. It's such a great movie. So I have a question for you. Are you going to see the new Pet Sematary?
Oh, I'm sure I will at some point.
I can't believe how much the Gage character, the little actor, how much he looks like you did when you were that age.
Pretty similar.
And cool. I wonder if that was intentional. I mean, I'm sure it was intentional to bring back a similar look. It was fascinating to me to see that your image is actually so ingrained in that Stephen King character that they made the decision to pick a child who looked like you.
And that, yeah, wow, I guess so.
That's kind of crazy that you and that character kind of won in some weird, awesome way.
Yeah. No, you just got me thinking about it, because they could have easily done a different interpretation. Wow. Yeah,
exactly. Like they did that on purpose, which is...
That's nice to think so.
Okay, so I have one more question for you. It's a question I ask all of our Class of 89 graduates, but it's a little different for you because you were 2.5 years old in 1989, but I'll ask you anyway and see what you come up with. What advice would you give Miko Hughes 30 years ago?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Yeah, I'm not sure. I think things are good. I don't know. I'm sure if I sat here long enough, I could think of something. Buy Bitcoin? Really? Buy more Bitcoin?
That's a good one, for sure.
Yeah.
I wish I had thought about that about 5 years ago, for sure.
Yeah, right.
We'll always love you as Gage Creed in Pet Sematary. We're just so happy that you joined us on Class of 89. And, you know, we're excited for any projects that you're involved with. So let us know what you're working on and, you know, keep us up to date.
Yeah, will do. Thank you, Natasha.
No fair. No fair, no fair.
Academy Award nominated makeup effects artist John Blake was just starting out when he took the job as makeup effects assistant to Lance and David Anderson on Pet Sematary. Here's our brief but fascinating chat on the movie. I think you had done Witchboard and Alienation with James Caan prior. What was your path to Pet Sematary?
Pet Sematary did come pretty early in my career, and I'd done a few movies before then. I'd worked on set on a couple of films, and I'd worked in the lab with Stan Winston and Lance Anderson. And I don't know if I'd worked with Rick Baker at that time or not. I can't remember. And because what I did is I came into this business with a background in theater makeup and fashion makeup and didn't have any film experience, but I studied art in college, and on my weekends I would work on student films, and that's how I kind of broke into the business. And then special effects makeup was coming up at the time, and once, you know, people found out that I had a background in fine art and sculpting, and knew how to make molds and sculpt and stuff like that, they'd let me help out with the special effects stuff as well, although I never really specialized in doing, you know, what they call special effects makeup. I was more all-around makeup artist, you know, type of guy. But on this movie, on Pet Sematary, my job was just to help Dave out and do the special effects makeup on it. And that included makeup on Fred Gwynn as well.
I heard this somewhere that Fred's hair was dyed white for the movie. Yeah. Is that true?
Yeah. His hair is black. His hair is quite dark. Well, maybe not. Yeah, his hair is quite dark. And the hairstylist on the show bleached his hair up to a white color. I think he did a great job.
So how did you and Dave set up the workflow?
Well, the workflow was on all the special effects characters. We just kind of divide them in half. And we just kind of, he would do half the face, I'd do the other half. And we just kind of, you know, take each other, you know, get ideas from each other. And, you know, oh, you did something cool. Okay, let me try that over here. And we just kind of both attacked it.
Wow.
And it worked out pretty good.
Tell me a little bit about how you guys did the Zelda makeup.
Oh, the Zelda. That was all done by Lance. Lance did that back in Los Angeles. He made all the pieces and things like that, and then we shot it out here. But I think Dave and Lance did all that. I wasn't involved in the Zelda makeup.
Gotcha.
But that was, yeah, Dave and Lance did that. Yeah, and it was played by a young man.
Yeah, Andrew Hubatsik.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't find a girl that was kind of scary and thin enough to be that character. So Mary Lambert was like, well, let's check out the other side and see what happens. And I think the effect is just so eerie and creepy. And Andrew was perfect in that role.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was.
And another guy who was amazing was Brad Greenquist as Victor Pascal.
Yeah.
And you worked with him on his makeup. Can you tell us a little bit about that process?
Yeah, that was our main workload was taking care of Pascal. And Dave and I, we just both did that, you know, sticking on a headpiece and then, you know, getting him all painted up with the veins and stuff like that. The veiny thing, that's something Dave and I came up with, you know, I originally came up with the idea of, you know, doing lots of veins, but Dave was actually better at it than I was, so he ended up doing most of the vein work, and I've noticed that on a lot of zombie movies since then, they started doing veins. I don't think I was the first guy to do the vein stuff, though. I think it was done by I think Steve Johnson. Did a lot of veiny zombies on a movie called Dead Heat. I was kind of copying him.
It's great because you can kind of see as the movie progresses that there's more veins than what you originally saw. And it's just a really cool kind of little detail that you probably missed the first time you watched the movie. But then when you pay attention to his face, you're like, whoa, he's looking bad now.
Yeah, I think that was just an accident. I think we just started getting more carried away as we went.
That's awesome. All right, I have to ask about Church. So.
The cat.
Yes.
I think we just messed him up with a little bit of hair gel. I don't think there was much to that.
Really? Wow. Man, hair gel goes a long way because he looks pretty rough. And I think there were about seven different cats for Church, including puppets.
There was puppet cats. Yeah.
Did you work with any of the puppet cats?
No, I didn't. I didn't do that at all. I can't remember who did that.
Well, let's talk about Miko Hughes's makeup for Gage Creep.
Yeah, well, he was a puppet through most of it.
Right.
That was a puppet that Lance made. Lance made it really cool, you know, mechanical Gage that worked through most of it, and then just some of the close-ups. We used a little boy, and I think he just had a little scar down in front of his forehead. We had to make it pretty simple because he was only like 3 years old or so.
Yeah, I think he was even less than that. I think he was like 2.5 or something. But yeah, that was probably the best way to go. Keep it simple because little kids are hard to work with to begin with. So
and then Rachel, that was something that. That Lance did. That was just a one-piece appliance, you know, very simple. Just put right on her face, and it just shot for that one day.
Wow, because I think between Rachel and Pascal, like Rachel's makeup rivals his in the blood department for sure. And that's one of the more shocking looks in the whole film. The work that you and David and Lance Anderson did is, you know, just iconic now. I mean, people have tattoos of your creations on their bodies, and
they do. Yeah. Kind of, it's nice to to get a a cinematic icon in your repertoire.
Absolutely, and you know, coming from such a legend such as yourself, I mean, you've been consistently working this entire time. I know that you just worked on pretty much all of the Avenger movies.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm a legend or not. I'm just another Hollywood guy trying to pay the bills.
I would say you're a legend, John. I think our Fangoria audience would say you're a legend. And, you know.
Well, maybe because I've been doing it a long time. I think, you know, Rick Baker, he's a legend, you know.
Well, Rick is definitely a legend, but you've contributed to, you know, the films that we love, and we'll forever be grateful to you for that. And John, I have one last question for you. It's a question I ask all of our graduates of 1989, you know, since Pet Sematary is turning 30 this year. It's a very special anniversary. What advice would you give yourself 30 years ago?
I don't know. Just always treat everybody with kindness and respect.
That's a great answer. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, John, on Class of 89. I hope this podcast inspires everyone to go back and watch John Blake and Lance and David Anderson's special effects work in Pet Sematary. Thanks for listening to Fangoria Presents Class of 89. We really appreciate you tuning in. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcast app. And follow Fangoria on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the horror content you crave. Class of 89 is a Fangoria Podcast Network original, produced and hosted by Natasha Pacetta, executive producers Dallas Saunier and Phil Nobile Jr., associate producer Jessica Safavimer, art and design by Ashley Detmering, sound recording, design, and mixing by Natasha Pacetta, music by James Malone. For Fangoria, Brandon Wynardi, Jason Kozlerich, Rachel Wilson, and special thanks to Udo Kier.